Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Nutcracker Syndrome podcast with yours truly, Simone. I'm excited for this episode, episode 10, where I'm going to talk about inpatient recommendations. So maybe you're staring down the barrel of the surgery and you're really, really nervous. Just like I was, they put me on pretty intense anti-anxiety meds leading up to it because the nightmares and all of that were not great. I share that not to freak you out, because to be quite honest with you, the surgery wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. It was a major surgery, sure. And maybe the Dilaudid helped me with just being like, oh, this isn't that bad. But it really wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. The first 2 days were really, kind of crucial and hard, but I loved my inpatient experience. So what I want to do in this episode is talk about some of the things that I brought with me that I really loved, some kind of things too that I didn't know to expect that I kind of wish I could have gone in with a better mindset about. So I'll talk about some of that stuff for you all so you can be better prepared for inpatient. Now, the things that worked for me might not work for you. So if somebody's listening to this and you've done inpatient before, please drop in the comments and say, like, oh, something else that worked for me that I didn't mention is this. So this is me just kind of starting the conversation. So, for starters, for inpatient, I think I've mentioned this in another episode. I was told at UW Health in Madison, Wisconsin, with Doctors Foley and Phillips, that I would be inpatient for about 5 to 10 days. I was discharged on day 9. Some of me staying that long was because the first 2 days, and I hate using the word complications because I feel like it's very like, oh no, complications, that's bad. I was just really, my blood pressure, I was struggling to get my blood pressure up, but that was normal for me. That's in almost every surgery. So I couldn't start the epidural, like the numbing medication, until day 3. And so that prolonged a little bit of my instay, or like my inpatient, just so y'all know. There's other places, so I would ask whatever surgeon you're going to go with just what to expect from inpatient as far as days in on the transplant floor will be. Because I do know, I think I've mentioned before, like doctors in Dayhaus and Salt Lake, sometimes he discharges people at day 2, 3. That's personally not my flavor. Having gone through this, I'm so glad I had the 9 days, honestly. That could, to be fair, I just, full context, my insurance was fully, my deductible had been met, my out-of-pocket max had been met. So I wasn't, I just want to say that I'm very aware of my situation, that I knew everything was going to be paid for. So the financial aspect of that wasn't at play, where maybe for some of you it is. So I just want to be considerate that everybody shows up to their inpatient in a different set of circumstances. So some of what I'm sharing, I'm very aware, is nuanced. So just take that with you. Ask the questions of your surgeon. But as far as inpatient stuff that went on, some of the things that I actually want to start out talking about were things I was not expecting inpatient. And I actually wish I would have talked about this in the auto transplant episode, but I'll talk about it here. So when they're relocating a kidney, obviously, like, I intuitively knew weight was going to be a thing, but I gained 25 pounds in 2 days of mostly water weight, and I just wasn't prepared for that. It did take a mental toll, and what I, because they're pumping a lot of fluid in you during the surgery and then also postoperatively for the first couple of days. So I, the pressure from gaining that much water weight hurt. It, like, when I say hurt, I would say it was uncomfortable. It wasn't painful per se. It was just uncomfortable. And I joked that I really wish they would have put like a little faucet, like inserted a faucet that I could just turn on and like the water would just come out. With that being said, I did ask, they offered me a medication. I think it's called LASIK, that helped me pee it out. So for the next couple of days, I think it was day 5 or 6, I finally started kind of getting back to normal, but I looked like a straight cylinder. I mean, from just neck down, it was one solid form. So, that was a little, I wasn't prepared for that. So, and as an example, what that influenced is I actually brought, like, I brought a bag with some clothes in it because I was like, okay, I don't want to stay in, I don't want to live in my hospital gown. When I work with injured athletes from a performance psych space, we talk a lot about, like, when you're injured, you don't necessarily have to like wake up and get fully decked out in your best clothes, but still wake up and get ready. Because sometimes, like, waking up and just kind of going about your day, being in your stretchy clothes can put you in a put you in whatever mood it puts you in. And sometimes getting up and maybe still wearing the stretchy pants on the bottom if like your injury's on the below the belt. But like getting up, taking a shower, doing your hair, like whatever that looks like for you. So I brought some clothes. They were all, kind of larger. They were stretchy clothes, but I was just like, okay, I'm gonna bring these things that I'll wear. I'll kind of wake up, have a routine. I was trying to have a routine about me. And that was laughable. The 25 pounds I gained, it actually almost hurt my mentality worse because I went to go put on my like track suit situation that I brought, very stretchy, baggy, whatever, and I couldn't even get my legs into them. It's just like, okay. So I lived in the hospital gown the entire time and learned to love it. So that's just something to let you know. Like, there, you're probably going to gain some weight. You're probably going to swell kind of beyond what you might think. And I just kept asking the nurses, like, is this normal? And they kept saying, yep, this is normal. This is normal. So just be prepared for that. I also had something. This is, to some circles, a little TMI, but let's be real. We're all in this together. My right labia swelled. I looked like I had a nutsack. It was like day three, four. I went to the bathroom and I go to wipe down there and I was like, something just didn't feel right. And I looked down and I was like, oh. So I called the nurse in and I'm like, is this normal? And I show them and it was a nutsack. It was like, hello. And she's like, I don't know. They call it, the charge nurse comes in and she's like, this is normal. It's not necessarily usual. So they have had a couple nutcracker patients where there is swelling. She even told me that there was one individual that their labia swelled even more. She was like, it's likely going to go down. But they ended up, when I showed them that, they sent me back to get an ultrasound to just make sure everything was okay. And it was. I did have a bit of a like liquefied hematoma around my kidney, but it wasn't anything that was too concerning. And they just assumed, the assumption was, well, maybe the kidney with all the swelling, it's like pressing on that left ovarian vein and causing some of the labia swelling. I'd share that here with you all. And obviously, like I'm a woman, like I have those kind of reproductive parts, and I know men go through this as well. So just like, it could show up differently for you in your reproductive space. So just know that that's not off limits. It could happen to you. And if it does, not much to freak out about. Just let your nurse know. So anytime something kind of weird pops up, like, hey, is this weird? So that was two things in my inpatient that did happen that I was a little like, oh, I wasn't prepared for this. I didn't necessarily freak out, but I just, there was that. A couple things with scheduling too. You will, as far as I think I also been trying to be very thorough on this episode, so I wrote some things down. Don't be alarmed. I think I was a little taken back. This was my first inpatient experience. The first 2 days, I rarely got any sleep, and a lot of that was I had my catheter in, so I wasn't getting up to pee. They would come in every 2 hours and dump my pee out. So I'm a very light sleeper. I brought a sleep mask, I brought some earbuds, but I still would wake up, and then I'd chat with them and stuff. So I was just getting used to the inpatient feel. And if it wasn't somebody coming in every 2 hours to dump my catheter, they were coming in to take my vitals pretty regularly. I think that was also every 2 hours, so around the same time of dumping my catheter. Most nights, like around 2 a.m., I think they would come in and do my weight to just see if my weight was trending downward, which it was. I didn't lose all the 25 pounds while inpatient, but we saw that the numbers were trending downward, which was good. That meant that I was the water weight was coming off. And then every morning around between 5 to 6, somebody from labs would come in and poke me, so I'd get waken up by a needle, which was not obviously ideal, but usually it's a phlebotomist that comes in. I think that's how you say that. And they're amazing. I didn't even feel her poking me. I even told her, I was like, you're really good at your job. She was great. You get woken up a lot. That's just what I'm gonna say. And I was able to, around day three, four, I feel like day four, I was really able to get into a better sleeping groove. I think my body just kind of adapted to the schedule. They took the catheter out on day two, so they weren't coming in every 2 hours, and they also weren't coming in every 2 hours to do my vitals at that point because I had demonstrated to be stable. But you will get woken up in the middle of the night. At least my nighttime nurse would come in, I think, once, and unless I called her. So, and then I had a whiteboard, so I was always kind of like logging my urine outputs, and then if I had a bowel movement and stuff like that. So I wasn't necessarily calling them, and I was like, hey, I can actually leave. I'll put the time and the time stamp and all this stuff, so you can come in and log that retroactively just to give me the space. So that was something too, I just want to say to like prepare for inpatient, is I didn't realize those first 2 days would be kind of that so many people coming in and out. And it's okay. It's just, to me, if I know it's going to happen, I can just, rather than, I can be proactive and respond to it rather than being reactive in the moment, which I didn't necessarily react badly. It's just something I wish I would have known. So those are some of the things I wanted to throw out, overarching stuff. Another overarching thing too is the food menu. I was not prepared for this. So I, when I came out, and it's not bad, I feel like some of the times the way I say this, it makes it seem like you're like, oh no. It's really not bad. For the food menu, when I got out of surgery, for the first 2 days, I could not eat solid foods. I only had to eat a liquid, could only eat a liquid diet, drink a liquid diet, LOL. Because they would not let me, allow me to use eat any solid foods until I had a bowel movement or I farted. And so that sucked, because I woke, anytime I wake up for surgery, I just want a cheeseburger. So I was having a lot of, bone broths. They had Jell-O. I would highly, highly recommend to stay away from, any sugars. Like, go for things, proteins. Like, try to get the protein shakes. So, stay away from the inflammatory style foods and go for more protein, things that are more substantial in those regards. Kind of hitting your macros. I don't want to get on. I might even. I've been toying around. Talking to a nutritionist, so bring, not a nutritionist, a registered dietitian, because they were very different, and having them on an episode to talk about that, if you all are interested. But be prepared that you might not be able to eat solid foods until you have the bowel movement or until you fart. That was frustrating. I had like the whole nation on my social media. I was talking about like, I just want to eat solid foods, and everybody was very much cheering me on to take a shit, so that was exciting. And then once I did that and let them know that I had successfully done the business, then they gave me the new menu with solid foods. I'll say at UW Health, it wasn't, I'm a big, at that point, I was very big on like kind of salmon and more pescatarian diet. The salmon was super dry, same with the chicken. I couldn't even choke it down. So they had salads. They also had some other like quesadillas and tacos, like things that I was like, I don't really wanna mess with this as far as from a healing standpoint goes. So you are a little bit limited with the food menu, and every hospital is different. I wasn't necessarily in love with the food menu, but it was nice having the option for somebody to make you something. From time to time, I would have Kyle bring food in. So they're from UW Health. There's a Whole Foods like very close to the hospital. So he would bring some stuff in for me as well, like healthy snacks, things of that nature. So don't be surprised about the food menu. Don't be surprised if you can't come out just ripping a cheeseburger like I wanted to. And looking back, I'm glad they didn't allow me to do that, because there's no telling if they would have been like, yeah, here's your cheeseburger, on top of gaining 25 pounds of water weight. It just seems like a disaster. So that's the some of the overarching things I wanted to talk about. Now, oh, actually, another thing I'm trying to kind of group these together, visitors. So at UW Health, I guess I was going in thinking that people could just stay in the hospital with you overnight. And that was not the case. They had visitor hours from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. I'm pretty sure it was that time frame. I was a little hesitant at first. I wanted Kyle to be with there with me the whole time. Looking back, I actually loved this. I really, and I cannot express this enough, I loved my inpatient time so much. The nursing staff was wonderful. Everything was great. And I also loved it because I had that alone time to sit and process my emotions on what I just endured. And as much as I don't like, I mean, we don't really like leaning into emotion, it is so important for us to do so, to like identify how we're feeling and sit with that and allow that emotion space to speak to us. Just sitting with it is a sign of love. And I got that opportunity. I journaled a lot, I meditated a lot. And if Kyle would have been with there with me the entire time, I wouldn't have had that space to connect with myself. So, Speak with your surgeon about that, talking about kind of the hospital parameters on visitation hours. And if you are nervous about not having somebody there at all hours, I encourage you to maybe think about that a little differently. Like, what a blessing it is to have that time to yourself to just go inward. I was able to use that time to work with my therapist too. So I had some Zoom calls. That was fun, while I was inpatient. So that was another thing for visitors. On the flip side of that, I want to talk about furniture. So speaking about Kyle, who was my visitor, he would come, during the day, kind of hang around for a couple hours and then go do his own thing. Well, when I got wheeled back to my inpatient room, there were just fold-out chairs there. And I didn't real like again, it's my first time inpatient, so I don't really know what my options are. And I was like, oh, well, that's a bummer. Like, I saw that all the other rooms had these recliners in them. And I was like, well, that sucks that I got the room with just the fold-out chairs. So I think day three, I was having issues. Like, the way I was, the bed was, it was just not great. I needed to sit up more. Like, I was reclining the bed, but I needed to sit up more because my incision. So the nurse, I tell the nurse this, and she's like, oh, well, we will wheel in a recliner in here for you. I was like, oh, I didn't even realize these things are like, it's like a copy paste situation. Like, they could just wheel this stuff in here. So when they did that, they kept the recliner in there the entire time. And then Kyle was able to use that. So just understand, like, if the furniture in your space, like whatever it is, if you walk in and there isn't a recliner, or I mean, every hospital is different. Every hospital has their different things. I just didn't know it was an option. So I want to tell you that that's an option to just ask for those amenities. They were very, very giving. And if I would have known that, I would have said, like, oh, can he have something more comfortable than this, like, metal fold-out chair? It had some cushion to it, but come on. So those are some of the overarching things. I do want to talk more, get a little bit more nitty-gritty about how to have fun with your inpatient stay. So some of them are like thinking about comfort items that you bring for yourself. So some of the things that I brought for myself, so I want you to like, I hope what I'm telling you inspires you to be like, ooh, I could do this for me. Because what works for me, what is comfortable to me, is not comfortable for everybody else. So I brought a very comfortable, very, very plush blanket that has all these avocados all over it, and it's green. And it's just, it makes me happy. Like, the moment I saw it in the store, I was like, I need this. This blanket makes me happy. It just looks cozy. And I also bought a pillow. It's a very plush circular sunflower pillow that's yellow. Again, just happy, very comfortable. So I brought that with me and used it for like back support, or just used it sometimes even if I was like laying on my side to like hold and snuggle with. So again, these tangible comfort items that just make your heart smile, whatever that is for you. That could also be like stuffed animals. Just so y'all know, I'm a 35-year-old woman. I'm a professor. Like, on paper, people probably aren't going to be like, this lady is going to bring a stuffed animal slash doll with her to the inpatient. But let me just tell you, that's exactly what I did. One of my really good friends gifted me this like really beautiful, loving doll, plush doll, right before I went for my surgery. And I brought her with me and carried her around everywhere. So, legitimately, I mean, the only thing I wasn't doing is putting my thumb in my mouth to suck it. And if that brought me comfort, I would have done that. I mean, nothing was off the table here, people, is what I'm trying to say. Because when you're going through something as majorly vulnerable as a transplant surgery, relocating your kidney to some other location. And for me, it was a full open abdominal surgery. So that was a another level of, I believe, vulnerability when your body was splayed open like that on a oper in an operating room. So when I went to get my ultrasound, I brought my stuffed doll with me. When I went outside to go get some fresh air, stuffed doll was with me. So I just want to give you permission to set aside the so should to, have to, ought to, I'm a 50-year-old, 60-year-old person, I should be doing that. Who gives a rip? Go to the store, buy that stuffed animal, and if you come across one, you're like, that's the buddy I want in the hospital, buy it. There is no, I never felt, nobody made me feel weird at all. So really just be kind to yourself in that way. I mentioned a sleep mask and earbuds. I think those are essential for the entire thing. I bought a pretty heavy like very thick eye sleep mask that I remember a surgeon came and was like, "What is that?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, this is," and it like covers not my nose, like my nostrils, but it goes all the way down to my nostrils. So that way none of the light gets up in, like if you're laying back, so it won't get up in that little kind of gap. And the earbuds, that can whatever. I use the silicone kind. Judge me if you want. Some people are like, "Those aren't good for you." I don't really care. But those are essential. Like I said, the first 2 days, just a lot of commotion. You might not be sleeping well. So those did help me sleep for the time that I could. And then a second thing is I brought a Bluetooth speaker. I had, especially at night, meditation music going. In my realm of sports psychology, working with injury athletes, there's different kind of wave brain waves, like alpha, beta, theta waves, stuff like that, delta waves. So I would look up on either, Spotify. I also have the Insight Timer app, which is a meditation app, and I would find like delta wave music, as delta waves have been have demonstrated in the research to have a stronger correlation with healing properties in the body. So I would find a nice meditative soundtrack, and that was, had delta waves incorporated, and I played that all night. So not only did I have my earbuds, I also had this kind of like drowning out nice meditative, spa music going on in the background. And I also asked them if they'd bring a stand-up fan in, because your girl is somebody who loves sleeping with a fan at night. I just like the white noise. So I did my best, and it did help drown a lot of stuff out for me. So just bring that Bluetooth speaker for yourself. It doesn't have to be meditative music. On Christmas, for example, I had NSYNC playing. I had NSYNC playing. So just it helped lighten the mood. If you're in a down, if you're in a down day, put music on that just makes you want to dance. Maybe you can't dance, but it just gives you that energy, that emotion there. Something else I did that I am so happy I did. I'll be honest with you, I was a little insecure doing this because I was like, I don't want to do the most, blah blah. But looking back, I'm like, who gives a rip? I decorated my inpatient room. So beyond bringing the comfort items, I went to Party City and I bought some balloons. What all did I have? So I brought one of those like aura projecting light things that like projects like the northern lights with, stars and stuff on the ceiling. So I brought one of those. That was a major, major, major hit. Everybody on the transplant floor loved it. Doctors would come in and wake me up, and I would be like, they'd be like, "Oh, this is a vibe." And I was like, yeah, it was so cozy. Like at night, it just made me feel very like I wasn't in this just beige, sterile hospital room. I also brought balloons. They were these gold kind of moon slash star balloons that we hung up everywhere. I bought some of those like kind of hanging decorations that are the like pom-pom little things. We hung those up. Whatever it is that's going to make your room fun and just like it felt like a cave to me. Like I built my fort as a kid, and looking back, I'm like, oh, I should have, that'd be kind of would have been funny, build a little fort around my bed. But it was so nice, so peaceful. So at night, I'd have my meditation music going. I'd have the lights turned off with the aurora light going. And it was just extremely peaceful, very calming. There was a couple nights that I woke up like and didn't know where I was. It was the pain medicine that just kind of made me be like, for a couple seconds, I was like very disassociated with the room and didn't know where I was. But I kind of jolted awake and was like, oh, this is beautiful. And then I was like, oh, I'm in the hospital. So that really helped me a lot in doing that those decorations. Now, something I do want to make a mention of that somebody brought to my attention, and I don't know if this is for every hospital in the nation, so I just decided to err on the side of caution, is to remember something to remember about the balloons is that most hospitals now do not allow latex balloons in their facility due to latex allergies. Again, I don't know if this is something you can generalize to all hospitals. I was like a couple days away from my surgery, so I was like, okay, that's good to know. I went ahead, I got like the gold crinkly kind. So they were the non-latex kind. They don't float necessarily. So we just like took some paper sorry, took some tape and taped them to the wall. So keep that in mind. It was something I kind of learned along the way. I wanted to pass along to You all. Let's see here. As far as activities to do, one thing that I did not think about at all for inpatient was puzzles were amazing. UW Health has a little corner with a table, and they have a bunch of puzzles. I actually donated one to them because Kyle and I got one post-operatively, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to give this back to the transplant floor. And we would spend hours. I'd take my little pain unit with me, and him and I would sit down there and just puzzle. And it was so cathartic. It helped distract me from any pain I was having, so much so that I actually accidentally skipped like a pain medicine. Like when they were supposed to bring me my pain meds. And that gave me more confidence to be like, oh, okay, I skipped my pain meds. And while the pain was kind of there, it wasn't, I was like, oh, I can actually manage this. So, and I was able, I asked them to bring me like a ice pack and stuff for the incision that also helped with pain. So if you want to ask if the transplant floor, wherever you're going to be at, has puzzles, that's a question that you can ask your surgeon or just whoever knows that area. Or bring your own. Have a family member bring in a fun puzzle that you can do in your room. Kyle and I love doing that. We'd spend hours doing it. I mentioned like journaling. Meditation. Something I was also gifted before I was inpatient were some oracle cards that were plant-based, which I loved because I would often, when I was meditating or getting into that grounded space, I would pull, you know, I would shuffle the deck and be thinking about my question, you know, what that I was wanting to ask the deck. And one day, actually, I think it was day six, I was like, you know what? I want to ask the deck, like, what should I take? Like, what should I take with me from this experience? And I was also at the same time thinking about, like, I want to get a tattoo to commemorate this experience, et cetera, et cetera. And I pulled the California poppy card. And I remember reading the meaning of this card. And it went on to say something about reconnecting with your childlike nature and resting in the joy of the sun, et cetera, et cetera. And it really resonated with me because, as all of us know that are on this journey, or maybe you're listening to this podcast and a loved one of yours is going through this journey, your soul is sucked from you. I lost so much of myself over the last 2 years. And it's really, I mean, I'm getting emotional just thinking about it because there's grief there of the expectations I had and the hope I had for what I was going to do. And not only did I lose that childlike nature, and I even lost the ability to play in the sun because, as we all know, you can't even walk for more than 10 minutes sometime, let alone go play. So I really resonated with that card and I took it with me. And I then actually 3 months post-operatively went and got a tattoo of some California poppies as and that was my commemorative tattoo. Also, like, bring your computer, iPad, stuff like that. You can watch. They had a TV in the room. We never watched it, but it was nice. I had my computer so I could just get on there and do what I wanted, if you know, watch Netflix, things like that. So those are the things. That's not many activities, so definitely get, if you want to bring board, I guess something else, if you want to bring board games with you, cards, you know, play Skip-Bo, some cards. Kyle and I actually brought some cards. We never used them, but it was just nice to have them there to know that it was an option and to get out of your comfort zone of like kind of doing the things you always do at home, which for us, I mean, I also had my Kindle, so I was reading, you know, so there's a lot of different things that I was able to do, and the time just flew by, probably because I was on a lot of pain meds as well. Some things that I want to leave with two other things to end out this episode. Actually, I'm gonna leave out with three other things. I was working with a pain coach during this time, and you might be wondering what a pain coach is. So, there's a lot of research that supports two levels of pain. So, A, there's like structural pain, like what we're dealing with, right? Like there is a compression of the vascular left renal vein that's causing pain. So that's structural. But then there's also a mental component of that. And I think we've all experienced it, meaning that when we're anxious, we notice that our physical symptoms get exacerbated when we have anxiety, like, or at least I do. So if I'm in like more anxiety, the pain hurts more. So if we can go in and And I'm going to do an episode on kind of mental game tidbits for you. If we can go in and like turn down our mental anxiety about a situation, it can often help make the pain feel more manageable, somatically. I was working with a pain coach, and I was telling her how I could tell my anxiety was increasing because I was getting closer to discharge day. And I started realizing that I created this relationship with the nurse call button, right? It's very easy. It's right there next to you. You press it and you build a sense of confidence knowing if anything goes wrong, I just press the button and they're there pretty immediately. Well, when you get discharged, you don't have a nurse call button anymore. I mean, sure, you have your caretaker, but they're one individual and it's also not, they have other things going on with their life as well. So we were chatting about that, about my anxiety of being discharged. And one of the things my pain coach told me was to ask the doctors and the nurses these last couple of days to tell me that, like, once I get discharged and I start having some bad days, what if they were there and I were to ask them, like, hey, something's going on, what would they tell me? Like, basically take their words of wisdom with me. And they told that actually helped me a ton. And I wrote down what they would say. Everybody said something different but for the most part, a lot of it was, listen, it's gonna be a roller coaster. It's not linear. You're gonna have some days that are just worse than others. And there's not really anything that you did or didn't do that caused it. I mean, sure, you can go in and be like, eh, I probably should have drank more water, et cetera, et cetera. But just understand it's going to be a roller coaster. And as long as it's not like some sharp, extremely intense pain, it's more kind of a dull, achy feeling, you're going to be okay. But obviously, call us if they're like they do have an on-call number that you can call after hours. So that made me feel better. So just know, like, if you're nervous about getting discharged, ask the doctors, ask the nurses, like, hey, could you give me some words of wisdom I could take with me on the bad days, on the down roller coaster days? So that's something I'll give you there. Another thing is when we were being discharged, there were some things that I took with me. So they gave me compression socks. They actually put these compression socks on before the surgery, so in pre-op, and I wore them for the first couple of days. I think we did take them off. I think when I gained the 25 pounds, it was almost just like too much. And I also needed to shave my legs. So we took them off and I ended up putting them back on right before I left. But I took those with me. They also, while you're inpatient, they have this thing called a P hat, which is like such a technical term, but it's this, if none of you have had it, it's this thing you put in the toilet and you pee into it and it measures your urine output. So that way they can just see what your urine output is and make sure that everything's operating well. I asked them if I could take a pee hat with me home because I wanted to continue logging my urine output. Because I've noticed that logging my urine output while inpatient made me feel confident, like, oh, okay, we're hitting the mark, we're hitting the mark. So if I had a bad day or something, inpatient or even outpatient, I kept telling myself, my urine output is good. Things are chill. So I took a pee hat with me and kept track of my urine for the most part. After I think like a week at home, I stopped doing that. They also gave me a belly binder. I believe that was actually on me post-operatively. Like when I woke up from surgery, the belly binder was on. We took this off again when I gained the 25 pounds because it was very uncomfortable, but I took that belly binder with me and I still have it. So on the days where maybe I just felt like I needed more support or I just felt like my organs were jostling around a little bit more, I'd put the belly binder on when I was at home. They also provide you with like antiseptic wash, just some toiletries while you're inpatient. The ones that I used, I took with me. I even asked, like, hey, can I take another antiseptic bottle with me? And they brought it in. So don't be hesitant to ask for things that you can take with you. I mean, it's a hospital. They have a lot of money. So in my head, I'm like, when I looked at my breakdown, it was like $6,500 a day inpatient for just like the stay, you know? And I was like, okay, I'm gonna ask for another antiseptic wash. They can afford this. Another thing I was gonna do a separate episode on this, but I think I can kind of hit it here, is post-op recommendations. So everything I just gave was inpatient, but again, you're getting discharged and then you go post-operatively and now you're on your own. So some of the things there that were, I wouldn't say challenging as in bad, but It was just, for example, inpatient, the nurses are the one that they're bringing you your pain meds. They're bringing you your stuff. Like they're the ones that are keeping the alarm clocks for you and stuff, and you're just kind of sitting there existing. Then when you get discharged, when I went home, I was like, oh, I have to, like, I'm in charge of making sure I take my pain meds on time. So I went into my phone and on my alarm, I mean, I had like 12 alarms set because it was, take your Oxycontin or whatever they give you, oxycodone, every 6 hours. So I went in and would do that. And then at that same time, take the stool softeners. And then, you also had your Bactrim that you're taking as well, which is an antibiotic to make sure you don't get a UTI. And so every one of them was kind of taken at a different time. And so I set alarms for every time I needed to take them to just remind me to go do that so I wouldn't forget. Because as we all know, if you forget and you get behind on your pain meds, then you're trying to play catch up, and that is never fun. My suggestion to you is to. I would almost suggest doing this before you're discharged, just so it's like one less thing you have to deal with when you get home, is go ahead while you're inpatient. And that is if you know when you're supposed to take them. The pharmacist didn't actually, when I got discharged, they came in like an hour before I left and kind of had this four, single space sheet of all the medicines I needed to take and when to take them. So once you get that sheet, go into your alarm settings or go into your alarm app and set those alarms. Because again, you're on drugs. For me, I watched RuPaul's Drag Race and just fell asleep most of the time. So I'd forget if I didn't have the alarms to wake me up and be like, oh, I need to go take this stuff. So that's something I would say as far as transitioning into post-op. There were some things that I brought with me that I'm glad I did, which is I had this pretty, like, an extra large heating pad that I used for my lower back. When I was inpatient, I also asked for a heating pad as well, and they had this kind of big contraption that it would heat water up and flush it through this pad. So it wasn't this, like, electric heating pad like we know. So I had a heating pad for my lower back. I also brought a lot of pillows from home. For context, we drove out to Madison, so we were able to do that, to be able to prop me up on the couch, either prop my back up a little more or even prop my knees up, too. So that was nice just to have those support pillows around. I had a massage gun as well. That was great for the times that I just felt like maybe my upper back too. Like I told Kyle, like, stay away from that kidney area. Like we don't want to harm that. But like my upper back, my traps, oftentimes my legs. I like it when he does my feet as well. I had a TENS unit, which I got when working with a physical therapist. So that was really helpful in helping with some of the like aches and pains of my muscles. And then just for like extra self-care, I brought some face mask and a manicure kit. And just on those days that I was like, okay, it just made me feel a little better to do a little bit more for myself than just wash my face and brush my teeth, so that's something I would suggest there post-operatively. One thing I did not bring with me post-operatively that I wish I would have thought about ahead of time is a full abdominal ice pack. So again, my incisions were like sternum to pubic bone, so one long incision on my abdomen. And when I was inpatient, they o could only bring me like the ice packs with the ice, like ice cubes in it, and it didn't actually get as cold as I needed it to. Post-operatively, I realized I needed that, so we went shopping for them, and we could barely find, like, at Target or in any stores the size I was looking for. So we had to opt for this one ice pack that really wasn't ideal, and it still worked, but it was a little, like, annoying. So think about that, about bringing an ice pack with you, because that actually helped the most with the incision pain. It, like, numbed it, essentially, and it made me feel like I didn't have to take as much pain meds. So 2.5 weeks post-operatively, I stopped all my pain medication. I was just taking Tylenol and for pain meds because that ice pack honestly helped the most. Things that I brought with me that I feel like I didn't need. Now, before I even get into this, I just want to say something very quickly. My body is different from your body as you're listening to this. So take some of this with a grain of salt, because what I ended up not needing could be something that you do need and maybe you use for the rest of your life, as far as you realize, like, oh, a shower chair is amazing. Why haven't I been using this? So, this is just a, again, my lived experience. So take from this what you will. One of the things that I bought was a seatbelt cover. So one of those plush things that you can kind of Velcro around the lower that goes across your waist, that seatbelt portion. I bought one of those. And honestly, I felt like it got more in the way than it needed to, and it really didn't. I actually tried it, the seatbelt with and without it, and without it really wasn't bothering my incision as much as I thought it would. And looking back, I think that was just money I didn't need to spend. All I simply needed was like you could just roll up a sweatshirt, you can roll up anything to put in that area to protect it. So it's not something that I think you need to spend your money on. However, if you were like, you know what, I just feel more comfortable getting that, by all means. Two other things that I had was a shower chair. I bought like a $40 one online that had a back on it and a toilet seat that kind of elevated the toilet more. A lot of me bringing these things were I would rather have them and not need them. So please keep that in mind. If it makes you feel more comfortable to have them and not need them, do it. I mean, that's how I felt. I was like, I'd rather buy these things now and then donate them later, sell them later. But the shower chair, I was kind of surprised. I really thought that was something I would use a lot, and it was actually more annoying to use in the shower because you're sitting down, you're taking a shower, and the water is just kind of like hitting you where, like, it's like getting in your face. So I noticed that I was standing up more in the shower, not actually using the shower stool. So I maybe used the shower chair once when I was home. When I got discharged, when Kyle was helping me shower, but in reality, like he helped me shower once, and I just was like, you know what, I'd be more efficient doing this myself. And I didn't have any problems standing in the shower. So the shower chair was something I used once, and then I just donated to Goodwill. And the same with the toilet seat. I just never, you know, I was thinking with the full open abdominal that I'd have, my abs would be completely shot. And I was able to use a toilet normally. I didn't need the elevated seat there to help with that. But again, my body is different from yours. So I do recommend that if you have the means to purchase the things and have them just to have them, like you'd rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it type of a thing. Definitely, you know, take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. That was just my lived experience. Looking back, it would have been three less things I would have had to pay for slash bring with. And then we kind of logistically had to find a Goodwill to go and donate some of these things. So those are some of the stuff post-operatively I wanted to provide to you all. Also just walk both inpatient and post-op recommendations. Walk your little heart out and like don't overdo it obviously, but I was by day three, I couldn't walk at all the first 2 days. My blood pressure was not doing great. Day three, I was road running around the transplant floor and just really like, if I got bored, I was like, I'm gonna go do a couple laps. Listen to your body. Same thing when you get home post-operatively. Had an Airbnb in this neighborhood, so we would just walk the neighborhood, which was roughly about like 0.8 miles to a mile. And I would do a lap of that. We had our dogs with us, so we'd also walk them. I had Kyle walk our puppy because I didn't want, obviously, him pulling me. And my dog Kira, that's almost seven, she's really lax and chill. So just walk. That gets your blood pumping. Even if you're just walking around the living room, but try to do more. Well, let me back up. I don't want to be like, well, try to do this, and then you shame yourself for not. Some days, it might just be that you're getting off the couch and going to the bathroom. That's okay. Right. So again, listen to your body. I had some days where I was more horizontal than others. I had some days where I didn't go outside and walk at all. We had dogs, so that did hold me accountable to that. But some days I'd be like, Kyle, can you just go do this? I need to just lay horizontal. So don't do what you can. This is a no shame, shame zone. But walking is extremely good for getting blood pumping, and that oxygen-rich blood is going to go in and help make the connections between the newly implanted kidney and your ureter that's now reimplanted into your bladder in a new area. It's going to help heal those areas that they did cut and they sewed up on the left side. So walking is going to be your friend. And I really learned to love my walks. They were meditative in nature. And just a little tidbit there for you all. When you walk, it's a bilateral movement. And for anybody that's aware of what EMDR is, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, it is based on bilateral movement. So when you're walking and, you know, one foot goes in front of the other and then the other as you're going, That's bilateral movement that's stimulating your amygdala to open up, and it's helping you to process emotion. And sometimes you don't have to even focus on what that emotion is. So those walks really helped me emotionally as well. So it's not just for the physicality, like the physical somatic healing aspect of it. It's also for emotion as well. So if you start feeling overwhelmed, maybe just get up and go outside, walk around where you're at. It could just be a short little jaunt and come back. Even just getting up and changing your surroundings too. So walking outside, your body registers it as a new environment. And when you come back more refreshed, almost as if you pressed reset. So that's just a little tangent there about walking. But I hope this episode was very hopefully beneficial to you. I hope all of these are. Again, this is a labor of love. I'm just hoping to share with you my story so you feel better prepared for yours. And as I do with every single episode, before you go, I just want to invite you to just take a nice deep breath. And then slowly exhale. And again, a nice deep breath. And a slow exhale. And keep with that flow at your own pace as you transition maybe to the next episode or you go about your day. But wherever you are at, please, please give yourself a big, loving, grateful hug for showing up for yourself. We are very powerful human beings that are advocating to the best of our ability. And that is something that I don't believe is celebrated that much in this world. So let's do that for ourselves. I want to celebrate you. And I hope that you can find time to celebrate yourself.